Hello and welcome to the Worn and Wound podcast. My name is Blake Bettner. Today I'm joined in studio by Mr. Zach Kazan. Zach Kazan, hello.
Hello, Blake. How are you?
I'm excellent. We are also, of course, joined by our super producer, Josh. Josh, hello. How are you?
I'm doing real good. How are you guys?
Excellent. He's got another cool hat on, I see. He's got a mushroom.
I try.
Yeah, yeah. What do you got on your wrist over there, Josh?
I have my trusty bringing it back after my other one died, but it's completely fine because it lasted 4 years. The Casio, I think it's like the A15 something or other. I can't remember, but one of those super, super duper budget $20 Casios that are just amazing.
Yeah.
And look with everything. So
the like dollar to joy ratio on that watch has got to be through the roof, right?
It is through the roof. Yeah. I love this watch, actually.
Right on. Very cool. Zach Weiss is at the pop-up, which is, I guess by the time this airs, it will have passed. If you made it out to the pop-up, we appreciate you coming by. It was amazing to see so many people and so many incredible watches come through the show. Zach Kazan, that's why you are in town right now, actually.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, it's been a great event. I'm glad to be down here for it. It's a lot of fun to see watch collectors out and about after so many months of not being able to do that.
Yeah, yeah, it really has. And you can tell a lot of people have been itching to get out there and to talk to other watch people. And we've had a few people that have come and just kind of hung out for quite a while. We had one guy come and bring pretty much his whole watch collection down, wanted to get it out on the table and just talk about it, which is really cool. I appreciate him doing that. It was a lot of fun. I think he just missed his flight to France. He was supposed to like go visit his family in Paris. And he canceled, so he just like came and hang out at the shop, which is great. If you miss your flight, it's a great way to kill some time, I guess, right? So, Zach, what are you wearing on your wrist right now?
Today I'm wearing the Worn and Wound Zodiac Super Seawolf Limited Edition.
Very appropriate.
Yeah, yeah, I thought so.
Yeah, we've had, I feel like, quite a few people comment on that. I think I was wearing mine the last time I was there, and it gets a few looks.
It does. There's a lot of color. Yeah. I think watch collectors, particularly the type of watch collector that's going to come to the pop-up, they know the watch, so they might be on the lookout for it. We've got a poster of it kind of hanging up in the in the pop-up shop. So, it's a great watch.
Yeah, yeah. Super cool piece.
Yeah, I love that one. I am wearing I'm wearing a Rolex Explorer. This is the new Rolex Explorer in its old 36 millimeter. Size. It's a new case design in this one, though. We'll be doing a lot more on this for the site pretty soon. I will say I quite enjoy wearing it. When I first took it out of the box and put it on my wrist, it was almost a little jarring because, like, I have smaller watches, but I don't have any other 36 millimeter watches. And, you know, initially it was like, wow, this is small. But like after of like a 24 hour period of like getting used to it, and wearing it for a few days, it was just, oh, okay, this feels like this makes a lot of sense. It just completely melts off the wrist. It's magic.
That's the right size for an Explorer, I think. Yeah. You know, having tried on both 36 and 39 millimeter Explorers, you know, I have a big wrist. I could wear either size, but 36 feels more proportional, I think.
Yeah, it does. And I think it suits the watch better. The 39 is great, and I don't think it's like, obviously it's 39 millimeters, it's not like too big, but it's a lot of dial on that watch, which makes it feel kind of like a 40, 41 millimeter watch almost. At any rate, I'm happy it's back at 36, and I have really been enjoying wearing it on the wrist. So again, keep an eye out for much more of that. What is the coolest watch that you've seen come into the pop-up, Zach?
Oh, man. There's been a lot of cool watches come into the pop-up. We saw...
Yeah, there really has.
We saw an FP Journe in the pop-up. The reference escapes me, but it's one of the super lightweight titanium
chronographs. Yeah, I think it's a centigraph,
I think,
maybe?
So, something yeah. Like that. Just a very, very cool watch. But we've seen... We've seen a Langenzone, and we saw an MB&F come into the pop-up shop, and lots of cool, you know, smaller brands, you know, of course, lots of Rolex, but pretty wide variety of watches represented in the pop-up shop.
Yeah, which has been fantastic. And then, of course, I mean, the usual kind of slew of independent brands that we cover on Worn and Wound. I've seen Ferrers, Christopher Ward's, Autodromos, Brews. We've seen quite a few Brew watches come by, and for good reason, because our friend Jonathan had a, I don't know, what did you call it? It was like a gallery showing.
I think he called it a pop-up gallery.
A pop-up gallery, not too far away from where we were doing our pop-up shop in Soho. I stopped over there and said hi to him. He's a great guy. And he has a new watch that's called the Metric. The Metric, yes, which is pretty funky. It's asymmetrical. There's two different dials. What a cool watch. But I saw quite a few Brew watches that Lange, who the owner was fantastic. He took it off, let us play with it. You know, it was a deadbeat seconds
with a Remontour,
the 1 second Remontour. So very trick. The HM10, which is really cool on the wrist. Very light titanium. Mm-hmm. A vintage Daytona 6263 that the guy had on like a bright orange rubber strap. Which is awesome. All the way to new modern Oyster Flex gold Daytonas and pretty much everything in between has walked by. So it's been fun to see really cool watches on people's wrists. And the guy that brought in his collection, the Frenchman, is that the preferred nomenclature?
We'll find out,
I guess. That'd be like a Walter Socek dude moment happening here.
The preferred nomenclature.
He had a Serica. One of the original, field watches, 4512, maybe that was called. That was really cool to see just out in the wild that somebody had. Getting back to the new releases, this Brew watch, you wrote this up for us. I had a chance to check it out in person. What did you make of this thing?
I think it's really cool. I'm a big fan of Brew and what Jonathan's been doing with that brand over the last few years. He just has a great eye for detail, a great eye for design, and it's been fun to watch the brand evolve, particularly with the last two watches.
Retromatic, I think? Is that what it is?
We'll add it into the show notes. But the previous cushion case automatic watch with kind of like the honeycomb dial and several different colors. The name is still,
I think it's the Retromatic.
That's it. Yeah, maybe very well could be. Apologies to Jonathan if we've mangled that.
Josh is throwing shit around over there. He's so upset about it.
the Metric's really cool. I like an asymmetrical dial. It has a very, very cool. There are two colorways. There's the silver colorway with a vertically brushed dial, and kind of a more colorful colorway with really bright primary colors as accents. And it comes on a kind of pseudo integrated bracelet with straight links. It's just very cool. Really cool 70s vibe. It looks great.
It's a great size too.
Yep. Very approachable. It's under $400. So super affordable. Just a lot of style and design.
It's a Mecha Quartz as well, to be clear.
That's right. Yep. Yeah. Mecha Quartz.
We were planning on talking about this watch. Josh did not know this. As soon as we walked into the studio, he asked us about it without having heard it.
Yeah.
So it's out there. What colorway are you going with, Josh?
I didn't know they had multiple colorways of it.
Yeah.
I only saw the one I think that you guys, I think it was looking on your guys' site, but I think it was the one that you guys posted, the one with the, black dial.
Yeah, it's a black dial, and there's some pretty colorful pops on the dial as well. So the chapter ring, I guess it's got on the very bottom between 25 and 35 seconds is a different color. What's that about?
So that, I am not I'm not really an espresso person, but that is for timing the perfect cup of espresso, which apparently takes 25 to 35 seconds to brew properly. Hence the name of the brand and the functionality built into the chronographs that he's made. That's been a feature in other watches that he's made with that Mecha Quartz movement in the past.
Well, there you have it. That's a nice little Easter egg. I'm not a big,
you can time it for anything. I mean, you can use it for timing anything, not just coffee.
Sure.
Whatever you might need to time, food related or beverage related or otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Do you drink?
I was gonna say I used to be one of those coffee people who would time that. I used to be that serious, and then I realized that I couldn't taste a difference. I was just
between like 28 seconds and like 43 seconds.
Yeah, I used to be one of those people. I was just like, oh, I really wanted to get into this and be, see if I could really. I used to pretend like, oh yeah, it tastes better, but then I was just like, no, I'm just kidding myself.
We have a colleague Ed Jelly who's deep into the coffee world, and he might have something to say about that. I'm not. I don't want to put words in his mouth.
No, I'm the same way, and Look, I like wine, but I can enjoy a $12 bottle.
Exactly.
Too, and that's fine with me. So, with the apologies to all the wine and the cappuccino prep or whatever these things are. What are they?
Espresso.
Espresso.
Yeah.
Snobs. Okay. Not snobs. Enthusiasts. Sorry.
Yeah. Our palates are just are not discerning enough.
Yes. We are. Yeah. We're not too sophisticated here. So what else we have going on this week? I know there's a Rest in Sanhodinkee release, which we, in all honesty, have not seen yet as we record this. I'm sure it'll be great. I was a big fan of the first one.
Me too.
And with how they opened up the dial, I thought it was just fantastic. So I guess we'll move on. We won't even talk about that then.
We can't talk about it. We cannot talk about it. At the time of this recording, we don't know.
Yep.
We don't know the information. I'm guessing it's going to, follow the, kind of like the time telling format that we're used to from Resonance. It'd be weird if they just suddenly adopted a traditional time telling format for a three-hander limited edition. Actually, that might be that would get some headlines.
I'm sure it'll be great. There was another story that we put up on the site this week, and it was about a watch called the Ocean Diver, made by a brand Prometheus Watch Company, PWC. Yeah. If you've been a watch enthusiast for quite a while, like going back 10 years or more, and you've been a member of forums like Watch Talk forums and Watch You Seek, you might remember this watch. So this is a watch that Prometheus made a competition around the design of this watch, and they posted it in Watch You Seek's like design forum and let people just submit their designs, and the community voted on which one to actually make. I feel like you couldn't do this now because people would intentionally vote like the most ridiculous one up just to see them make it.
Well, didn't Seiko did this recently, right? With their Seiko 5 that we covered it on the site, and it wound up looking just like, but very similar to the classic Pogue chronograph.
Yeah.
But the, gold tone dial. So you might get something like that, something that's kind of like an homage to something from the past, very recognizable, they could just torpedo the whole process.
And there were some crazy, so the thread still exists, but very few of the images that were associated with it still exist. And there's some crazy, there's one that's like a triangle. You remember in The Office when there's that triangle iPad thing?
Oh, yeah, sure.
It's like that, except, shrunk down with a strap that goes on to either side.
Doesn't sound very ergonomic.
No, definitely. But that's the kind of thing that people today would have surely just voted up to the top. a guy named Brian F. Green actually ended up winning it with his design of the Ocean Diver. Which is, the original thread still does have, it's like an illustration of it, I guess. Mm-hmm. Which is really interesting looking. And so then they went off and made the watch. Their first pass, the prototype, didn't quite fit the bill for what they were looking for. So they switched manufacturing over to Switzerland. They changed the movement. They changed it quite a bit. So it took a few years to kind of get this thing in the hands of buyers. But eventually they did. And this is the Prometheus Ocean Diver that you saw on the site. And we go into a little more detail on this in the actual article that I wrote. But it's an interesting watch. It doesn't really look like anything else. It doesn't even really look like anything else that brand made or has made since. It just kind of stands apart as this, here's this thing that happened from the community.
Mm-hmm.
And it eventually spawned a GMT version and a very cool chronograph version with like lever pushers on it.
Yeah.
Which, as you mentioned, might be a little problematic in catching.
They're designed in such a way that I could just imagine something getting snagged on the lever and, you know, ripping the watch or your hand just clean off. Could be a disaster.
But it was neat. And I think it's this very unique aesthetic. It's like this, it's a bead blasted case that's like porthole-ish looking, but not like a Nautilus or Royal Oak or something
like that. Yeah, it's kind of its own thing.
Like, it looks wholly like its own thing. Like, I don't even know how to really describe it. It's a difficult watch to describe. And it worked. Like, I just cannot imagine this happening, this watch existing today. But it was a fun watch to kind of take a look back at. And this is something that we will be doing more of in the coming months. So these are reviews of watches that were maybe before the time of Worn and Wound, but we would have found interesting had Worn and Wound existed as it does today. Watches we definitely would have been writing about, and watches that would have been on our radar, and even going back into the 90s. I know mm-hmm. you've got one coming up that dips into the 90s and maybe older. If you guys have suggestions as to what you would like us to see, like, hey, if Worn and Wound existed in 1987 and this watch came out, you guys would have written about it, let us know. We'll take a look at it. So there's quite a few of these watches that are kind of like, I guess maybe hidden gems in a way, you could say, but there's an interesting story behind this. And the Prometheus Ocean Diver is like emblematic of that. Like, it's from an era that was very different in the watch community. And I talk a little bit about this in the thing as well. It's, you know, the hype thing wasn't really around. It was just like pure enthusiasts nerding out over weird details, watches, finding treasures on eBay and talking about them, you know, servicing, I don't know. It was just a very different kind of complexion of the community back then. Were you around? When did you join Watches? Are you a member of Watches Seek?
I do have a Watches Seek login. If you're interested, I'm sure I could go online and just figure out when I became a member. I didn't become a member on Watches Seek until I was a few years kind of like into the hobby. But I've been interested in watches seriously for, I don't know, like 8 or so years, I guess, at this point. And the, you know, I started searching or kind of like using Watch You Seek on a regular basis, maybe, I don't know, I guess like 2 or 3 years into that. It took me a while to discover the internet side of this hobby, because I'm old and I'm not good at like social media
so get off my lawn.
That's me. And
this was before Instagram. This was before we really engaged in the way that we do now, and it was before, like, nowadays it seems like new watches are maybe coming out like all the time type stuff, but back then the community was a very, very different place. Watch You Seek was a different place as well. It was owned by a fella by the name of Ernie Romers, mm-hmm. Who's a lovely guy. He and his wife would go to Basel every year. You know, we would have beers. He was from the Netherlands, I think. So he would come with the Dutch contingency of writers and just have a good time. So it's a very different place. Now it's owned by, I think, Vertical Scope. It's still very large, and it's a great resource, and it's still, I would imagine, the most active community on the internet.
Yeah, it's got to be.
So anyways, this Ocean Diver kind of took us back to these early days of like the things that initially pulled us into watch collecting, and this was one that like really did for me. It was a watch that I, maybe the first watch that I like remember being a part of. Like, I don't know if I bought it outright, or had to, like, you know, put a pre-order in and, like, wait a little bit for it or something like that. But it came, you know, it came with, like, a T-shirt and a really nice leather carrying case and some other accessories. It was just a neat story and to me, kind of, like, really symbolized why, like, what pulled me in and into this and why. I had to the initial one I sold, of course, like an idiot.
Well, I mean, that's what you do.
That's what you do. Yeah. It was a few months, just a few months ago that I found one after quite a bit of searching, actually. Thanks to a guy named Brent on WatchSeek. Thank you to him. You saw it in the office. What do you think of this watch?
It's really cool. It's it's a big tool watch. And it kind of is, you know, like to your point, it's not really like any other watch. It's very much its own thing. But there were a lot of other watches kind of in the same spirit of this watch during that time period that were all kind of their own thing. And there was just a lot of creativity in the hobby at that time. So it's sort of interesting to think about the watches that, you know, like that survived that era, the brands that survived that era, the many brands that didn't survive that era. But yeah, no, it's fun. It's sort of like it's like a time capsule, but for a time that was really, we're not that far removed from, but the industry has changed a lot, in the interim.
Yeah, it sure has. Do you have a watch like this? Like, what's your Prometheus Ocean Diver?
You know, I think probably the closest thing for me is probably like the Seiko Monster.
Yes.
You know, that was a watch that, you know, relatively early on I got, you know, kind of, not like obsessed with, but like I had one, and it was one of the first mechanical watches that I really, really loved. And it was, you know, it's just, obviously it's still like totally unique. And, you know, like I wrote a review of a kind of a more modern rendition of a Seiko Monster last year, and you know that watch has changed quite a bit, but there's a charm to the early ones, you know, and I had you know, like an original, you know, orange Monster, like, you know, from the first series, and it was just so cool. It was, you know, there was nothing else like it at the time, and yeah, it sort of, you know, like it opened a rabbit hole in my brain to lots of other things. And I'm still interested in kind of like unusually shaped cases, and like the avant-garde stuff still kind of has a pull on me. And I think that's probably because of the Seiko Monster experience that I had relatively early on.
That watch had a cult following.
Yeah. I was part of the cult for a while. Yeah. I'm not, like, I don't own a Monster currently. I would like to, you know, maybe find an older one. You know, at some point prices have gone up. I don't know if I'd feel comfortable paying like the asking price, knowing like what the watch is, you know, they're cool. Like, it's the kind of watch that can develop that cult pretty easily, just because it's so unusual. You kind of have to be a little weird to really love a watch like that, I think.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's and this had a bright orange dial. I think they came in a yellow dial as well.
There were a bunch of different colors. There were limited editions and in a variety of colors, but I had an orange one.
Okay. And you sold it, obviously, at some point.
I did sell it, yeah. I sold it for not nearly what they're going for now. I'm sure I probably lost money on it. But hey, you know, that's what happens when you're in the watch hobby, and you know, especially early on.
Yeah, that's life. What about any watches that were kind of like a flash in the pan from brands that maybe didn't make it so well? Do you remember kind of the first like small independent watch that kind of crossed your radar that you were like, ooh, that's interesting?
I don't want to offend any brands that might be in a flash in the pan.
Sure. Maybe that's the wrong terminology to use, but I remember the first time handling a Christopher Ward C60 Trident, I think it was. It was like a dive watch that I thought was pretty interesting, and the counterweight of the seconds hand had like a big giant Trident symbol on it, which I think they still do on some of them. I think that's maybe a little strange, but the watch itself, I thought was really cool, really charming. I think it was like $350 or something back then.
Christopher Ward's another brand that has really, and we've talked about this on the podcast many times, but they've changed so much over the course of their history in terms of their, you know, the types of watches that they make, their reputation among enthusiasts, you know, the design language has really evolved quite a bit. Like, that's a brand that if you went back to the earliest Christopher Ward watches and put them next to the most contemporary Christopher Ward watches, you would not necessarily think they were from the same brand if you if you like removed all the branding. So that's a brand that I had an early experience with, and you know, just kind of like seeing them from, you know, like my watch friends and whatnot, and they were you know, very, very cool watches even then. They're cooler now, though, I think, for sure.
Yeah. So this kind of brings us to, I guess, the subject that we wanted to talk about today, which was watches or watch brands that we would like to see kind of brought back, maybe to their former glory, or just brought back, period. Watches that are no longer, or watch brands that are maybe around, but not really doing what we would like to see them doing. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're owned by big conglomerate holding things and not really making the kinds of watches at all that we kind of know and love them for. You know, the brand that immediately jumps to mind is like an Anikar, mm-hmm. right? Who I think is technically still around, but probably a far cry from like some of the greats, like some of the great Sherpa watches that they used to make. Which to me, when I think of like funky old divers and even chronographs, that's kind of one of the cool brands that pops into my head.
Yeah, no, Anikar is, I believe they are still around. I think that they, you know, someone owns the brand name and they're producing watches. I could be wrong about this, but we'll definitely link to their website in the show notes. But, you know, they're certainly not making the types of watches that vintage watch enthusiasts have kind of like elevated over the past few years. They don't have that type of reputation in 2021, at least not that I can detect.
Yeah, but seeing a brand like Nevada Gretchen doing what they're doing right now, mm-hmm. and bringing back some of the like greatest hits from their back catalog under new ownership, like I feel like that's a brand that would be ripe for that to like come back and like really get some of their classics right.
Yep.
And bring maybe three or four of them, five of them, whatever, like done right, I think would crush.
Yeah, and that Nevada Gretchen model is working because they give their customers a lot of choices in the watches that they release, in terms of you know, really everything from the colorway to the movement. Yeah. There's just a lot of options available to you. And the watches themselves are just cool. Like they, you know, obviously if you have a, if you have an eye for these like vintage chronographs, vintage tool watches from them, you know, from the 60s, you know, they were making those watches like at a very high level then. And if you're copying the look of those watches now, like you're going to have a winning design. It's going to look great.
Yeah. Like you understand the models that people would respond to now, mm-hmm. like that enthusiasts would really respond to, understand why, and be able to get like interpret those details, mm-hmm. in a way that respects, you know, the originals. I'll give our contributor Brad Holmes a shout out. I think he recently took delivery of his Depth Master, I think it's called, mm-hmm. with the Pac-Man dial. Looks awesome. So yeah, I think that shows like, hey, this can be done, and it can be done effectively. I mean, it's easy for me to say sitting here. I didn't actually do it. I'm sure a lot of work and resources and all that kind of stuff went into it. And I applaud them for actually doing it. You know, a brand like Universal Genève is another one, you know, that I think is like ripe for that. But is there a watch that you would love to see kind of make a comeback?
So I know a brand that we've talked about, you know, kind of, that we'd like to see just do things a little bit differently is IWC, and the way that they handle basically any of their sports watches besides the Pilots.
sure. Yeah.
So I'm thinking like the Aquatimers, the Ingenieurs, you know, these watches are, you know, to my mind, like really due for a revamp and a refresh. And, I think there's a lot of speculation that might be happening, you know, relatively soon, hopefully. But that's a brand that, that has like some real great watch designs from not too long ago, mm-hmm. that, you know, in my opinion, they've kind of let go a little bit stale. So yeah, like that's my immediate thought is that there's a lot of low hanging fruit there for a brand like IWC, because they've just got so many core models that they could return to and really do a great job with.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with you there, and I think this is something that that I put to Christopher Granger, who is currently at the head of IWC, and he seems to understand this. He's like, I think his answer was something along the lines of, "This is what I think about, and those are the kinds of things that keep me up at night." Like obviously they've got a good thing going with their pilot right now, and they're kind of like really leaning into that.
And the pilots watchers are great.
And like, that's great. And that's fine.
I have a review of the Big Pilot 43, you know, coming up. You know, as this airs, it'll run in the next couple of days. But, you know, that's a great watch. They did a great job with that. It's wonderfully executed. And I'm looking forward to them putting that type of refinement and work into, you know, like an Aqua Timer. Or an Engineer, you know, and some of these other watches in their collection.
Yeah, they have made fantastic Aqua Timers in the past, and Engineers in particular. I think they kind of switched up the design on that at, in my opinion, precisely the wrong moment. Just kind of as the whole like integrated sport watch thing was like really taking off,
right.
They kind of went back to, which in all fairness, the roots of the Engineer. Prior to the Genta design was a watch that looks very similar to what it looks like now,
yep.
Which there's nothing wrong. Like, I think it's a perfectly handsome watch the way that it looks right now. It just looks like generic watch, you know, but the Engineer has such a like fabulous design built into its history that I would love to see brought back. And not that long ago, they made like, I think it was a, you know, a 28-24, it was like 40 millimeters, relatively thin in that kind of porthole Engineer integrated case. That was fantastic, right? Yeah, I think that watch in particular is it would be very relevant if they brought it out like right now. And same with Chrono Tempus actually did a collab with IWC on an Aqua Timer that looks really incredible. Check out Chrono Tempus on Instagram and you'll see some pictures of it. It's a really great color scheme, but that's another like really unique diving watch that I think is could use a lot more attention to them. But hey, maybe like Pilot watch fans have been underserved for a long time and IWC's like, we got you.
they do indeed. They've got a they have a few Pilots watches. I don't know if you've noticed.
I've heard there's
a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. I think IWC's got a lot of opportunity in front of them. And again, full disclosure, my wife works for IWC. I don't know what they have planned, but I say this to her every night at dinner time. What's up with that? What's up with that Aqua Timer? What's up with that Engineer?
Man, sounds like great dinner time conversation.
Yeah. There actually is a lot of watch talk in my house.
I can imagine.
It's,
yeah,
it's great. Yeah, no, I think another brand that does still really great things today is Jaeger-LeCoultre. Jaeger.
No, I think you got
JLC,
it. I think Jaeger-LeCoultre, you nailed it the first time. Yeah.
So
great.
But they made some fabulous. They have some incredible watches in their back catalog. Obviously, going back, like I still come across watches from them that I didn't know existed. I'm like, oh, what is that? And it kind of takes you down a whole rabbit hole. This guy on Pierce Pro, the moderator of the JLC forum, just posted this beautiful old chronograph, the 13006 maybe. And it was just fantastic. And I know that they, not too long ago, they brought back like the Deep Sea. You remember this? Like the Deep Sea and Deep Sea Alarm watch, which are really cool. I guess it's maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago, something like that now. But I like those watches a lot. And when JLC does their like really great functional sport watches, I think they're on the money, and I would like to see them kind of get back to that.
Fully agreed. I own a vintage JLC sports watch. I own a Memovox E872, I think, is the the reference. I'll correct that in the show notes if I'm wrong. I get very confused with reference numbers, but it's from 1970. It has like a big kind of rectangular cushion case, extremely robust. If you were to put this watch next to like a modern JLC dress watch, which is really I think where their focus has been, you know, in recent history, you would not think they were from the same brand, but JLC has a great tradition of building really robust functional sports watches, and I would love to see them you know, get back to that. You know, really cool designs. You know, a lot of in the 60s and 70s, there were lots of, like, you know, very kind of era specific, kind of funky, mm-hmm. strange case designs. And I don't know if they'll ever get back to that. I personally would love that, because that's sort of my taste. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, better sports watches from JLC, more interesting sports watches from JLC is definitely something I'd love to see, because they really did it very well for a long time.
Yeah. And yes, I hear you right now yelling into your phone or computer. They make the Polaris. Yes, the Polaris is fine. It's not quite as good as it could be, in my opinion. I spent a lot of time with this watch.
I owned the blue dial Polaris.
Oh, did you?
For like a hot minute. I was not a fan of it. Like, yeah. I just was like the fit and finish to me was not on par. They're like, particularly with the bracelet, like, some, you know, there's some issues with just the way that the lugs fit to the case, or the end links fit to the case. I was not a fan of that watch. I flipped it almost immediately.
Yeah.
But like, that's sort of like the first step. Mm-hmm. I think I'd love to see them expand on that and just kind of like bump up the, bump up the refinement just a little bit on those sports watches.
Yep. Yeah. It's not a bad looking watch. The proportions are maybe a little weird on, like, in the flesh, I think. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I would like to see them kind of continue on and like evolve with that. What else is out there that we would like to see brought back? Does maybe like a modern 6139 from Seiko, or?
Sure. Yeah.
Right?
I mean, that would be insanely popular if they brought that watch back. I think that's a watch that people have been asking for a long time. Them.
Do they make automatic chronographs and entry?
They have an automatic chronograph movement. I'm not sure currently if they have a watch that uses it, and they must. I've probably written about it.
Oh, yeah, surely.
we're gonna get fact checked on this on this episode. Yes. Quite a bit.
That's fine. Fact check us out there. You know, we need it. We welcome it. And I'm sure there's a bunch of JLC fans out there that are like, these idiots don't know what's going on.
That's
which
fine.
Is very possible.
Yeah.
What do you have anything else in mind?
Something else that not a watch specifically, but more of like a trend in watches that I like to see come back, and I think maybe we are starting to see come back, is the return of the dress watch. I think that the industry and enthusiasts have been just like really laser focused on sports watches, particularly dive watches and chronographs, for a long time. That's sort of like the bread and butter of, you know, seemingly every watch brand. And I'm starting to sense a slight shift towards, towards simpler, dressier watches, or at least like casual, everyday watches that are like explicitly not sports watches.
Yeah.
So that's something I'd like to see. Just, you know, just another option, just something else, that we can wear besides a heavy sports watch on a bracelet, would be nice. Something thin, that straddles that line between casual and dressy. I think that's a type of watch that isn't made as frequently and as well by as many brands as could be doing it today.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I think this kind of gets into what we were talking about maybe a few weeks ago with the kind of genre bending watches, mm-hmm. and how you see a lot of manufacturers right now maybe trying to find like the gaps, right? Where it's like, I know some brands make like laser focus, like divers that can dive to, a million
meters
or whatever. Yeah. But there's, I think there's a real demand for, or desire for like practical watches that you can wear every single day that are like functionally capable, but also like don't look ridiculous if you like need to put a suit and a tie on or something like that. I'd argue this Explorer is a pretty good example of that. But as far as like going directly over to like a dressy watch, yeah, like I think you see sport watches that kind of come a little bit that direction. But maybe dressy watches that like move a little bit towards the casual, like sporty direction, but are still kind of like a dress watch at a core, right?
Yeah. So I think you mean just like dress watches that are like built to a standard that can like withstand, you know, like day to day, you know, exposure to water, you know, in small amounts. And
yeah. Like, and like where you wouldn't feel awkward wearing it with, like shorts and a t-shirt, you know, to the beach or grocery store or whatever, you know?
Right. Yeah. No, I think that's kind of, that's what I'm getting at. Just a, you know, more kind of like all purpose watches that aren't like explicitly sports watches, but I do like, you know, pure dress watches. And I think that, you know, there's a, that is something I would like to see brands return to. Just, we have enough sports watches. Like, we have a lot of sports watches.
Yeah, we're spoiled for choice.
Yeah.
Really, when it comes to sport watches.
But we don't have a lot of choices when it comes to, you know, nicer dress watches, at least at the at the price point I'm looking at. I feel like they're just, they're way more sports watches than dress watches.
Well, I guess we can give credit to JLC. They make a fine dress watch, too.
They do.
They're a master control date. They've got a bevy of really fantastic-looking dress watches. One brand that comes to mind that did do this, well, I guess maybe kind of what we're talking about, bring a kind of beloved old model back in some way, shape, or form, is Omega and the Constellation. Mm. And I know, like, the watch that maybe comes to mind when you hear, like, modern Omega Constellation is that, like, octagonal thing that they do now and have done, I guess, now for a while. But dress watch enthusiasts and aficionados will no doubt be thinking back to the OG Constellation, with the pie pan dials, mm-hmm. with the beautiful lugs. There's even some textures in there. Not all of them had the pie pan dials, but the bumper movements, they made a fantastic looking Constellation that I would argue like would slot in like rather well, depending on the case material, into this, like, yeah, you could dress it up to the nines. You could wear it with a t-shirt and jeans, you know, all day long. But they did bring it back. So I think it's like the Globemaster line. They brought back like a pie pan dial, technically a Constellation. And I think they even put maybe the observatory medallion on the back of it. That's a great looking watch.
Playing up the, I mean, that watch is historically important as a, you know, one of the, you know, early chronometer, you know, movements and you know, for Omega, so they're very proud of that fact. But yeah, no, that's a great watch. The pie pan dials are one of my favorite designs.
I don't know if many people know that they make that's it's just kind of like over there in the globe, in that other line there. But they do make it.
It speaks to the, you know, again, this like this trend. You know, Omega obviously is the maker of the Speedmaster and the Seamaster, two of like the most ubiquitous sports watches. And, you know, some of the dressier pieces are more like, you know, everyday kinds of pieces don't necessarily get the attention that they deserve, because all the eyes just go right to the Moonwatch and to the Seamasters.
I think if you go to the Omega website and click on watches, the thing that comes out, everything falls into like three collections. I think it's the Speedmaster, the Seamaster, and like DeVille or something like that. In the Constellation is a part of the DeVille, maybe, or maybe the Constellation is a fourth. I don't know. But like every single watch that they make, and they've got a lot of SKUs, all falls into like these three or four core families. So yeah, discovering the kind of watches like that, and they've got some great watches that are kind of hidden in there. And of course, they make great movements and all that kind of stuff that we know Omega can do. You know, they've got some watches in there that might surprise you, and they are capable of making a very nice dress watch as well. As they've shown for decades now. What else is out there that we're missing that we would like to see come back?
Green dials.
Oh, God.
Are we late on that?
This man. Yeah, we're finally ready for the green dials. I feel like we've been through, we have like PTSD over green dials now. Like there's like a three-month period where I felt like at least a few times a week, I would get an email. We're doing this watch with the green dial. We're doing this watch with the green dial. It was like a rush to add a green dial to whatever collection you had. You needed a green dial if it was going to be there.
The green rush. Yeah. I think we're at a point. We finally reached the point that it's just another color.
Yeah.
And you know that's the way it should be. You know, you can get a black dial, a white dial, a blue dial, a green dial. What am I missing? Like, what are those the core dial colors?
Then? Yeah, I mean, what's next? What's after green?
I mean, red.
Red? Oh, I don't know.
I've owned red dialed watches. Red's fun. Not versatile, but fun.
Yeah, not versatile. Yeah, I think that's the whole thing. Like, there's some of the green dials that have come out have been fantastic. Tag Heuer's Carrero, that green dial, beautiful. And some of the dials have been kind of the Glashütte original CQ, I think, recently came out with a green dial that is quite lovely. It's like forest dark green. I don't know if we've written about that watch on the site.
I don't believe we have. I know I haven't.
Okay. I may have. My memory is not exactly great. But
doesn't Oris have a green one too?
And like Oris, the Aquis that I just recently reviewed is also offered in a green dial. They've got a few good green dials.
They have a pointer date, I think, in a green dial too.
I think that's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, they do a good green.
I have my Grand Seiko has a green dial, and which, you know, I'm biased because I own it, and I loved it when I bought it, and I've kind of like grown to love it even more. But like that green is so dark in most lighting situations, it doesn't even really read as green. And then you get it out into the sunlight, and it's, you know, it really pops, and you see the texture, but it's sort of like a secret green almost. And I mean, just like any other color, you know, it can be executed well or it can be executed poorly.
We've seen a lot of great colors come out this year. And coming into this year, I think that was one of the predictions. Maybe Zach Weiss, we're all kind of talking about it, that we wanted to see more of in this year. And
it's been a good year for color.
Bang on. There's been a ton of really great colorful.
The watch I'm wearing has a lot of great color in it. The Brew watch that we discussed earlier, you know, super, super colorful. You know, people who are looking for extra color in their watches have gotten their wish this year, I think, for sure.
You got the Corsica Blue, the Autodromo, right? Or was it the other one?
I have two Group Bs, and they are the night stage watches. One of them has like a bright kind of greenish grid texture, and the other one has like a red pinkish texture. But they do make this one. You said it.
Yeah,
the Corsica Blue.
Yeah, the Corsica Blue. Bright blue. Rich dial. Yeah, they've made a great dial. Fairer has come out with some really fantastic colorful dials this year. Christopher Ward has done some good colors. Everyone is getting on that boat, jumping on the colorful. Well, I guess Rolex.
Rolex, well, the Oyster Perpetuals.
They're the OPs. Look at me.
Yeah.
Speaking of red dials, that coral red, I think, is quite nice.
Yeah, that's very nice.
Again, the versatility thing, though, comes into...
I wear whatever with whatever. I do not let myself get overly concerned about matching anything ever. As people in my life can attest, I'm often clashing. I like all of the colors, honestly, in the new Oyster Perpetuals. I think they did a nice job. Like, seeing them all together is really, really fun. Which one would you choose if you
I think that coral red one is the one that I would choose. I think the Tiffany blue one is quite nice. That's probably the one
that's my favorite
that like my wife would want as well, and I like it a lot. I would wear it, you know, without hesitation as well. The green, that, I mean, that's a decent green as well. It's kind of a darker green, but that the coral red, when we were when Zach and I went over to the Rolex building, they had up on whatever floor, they had like a little selection. I think it was like where the service waiting area is, and that was one of them. I think that was the first time that I had seen one in the flesh. And it does not, it's not just red, something a little, you know, it's a little like pastel-y, so which I like. This is probably another topic we could come back to. I'm sure Zach Weiss would have some feelings on watches he'd like to see brought back as well. If you have a watch that you would like to see brought back that you remember from the 90s, the 80s, the 70s, the 60s, that you would love to see brought back today in modern form, be sure to let us know. And what about brands too? Is there a brand that you miss or you think has really gone off track that you would like to see get back to their old ways? Let us know about it, and we'll talk about it. So I guess we'll leave it at that. I want to say thank you again to everyone who came out to the pop-up in New York last week. We had a fantastic time seeing everybody. We will, I'm sure, have a wrist spotting post going up on the site. If it's not up already, relatively soon, we saw some fantastic watches, and I tried to get a picture of everyone that would let me take a picture. If you came in and I made you uncomfortable by asking to take a picture of your watch, I apologize. But
people were very friendly. I mean, it's a watch meetup.
It's a watch.
Like, yep. People want to show off their watches. They want their photos taken. Like, I think, yeah, no, people are happy to be photographed with their yeah. watches, I think.
Yeah, and it was great to see watches all over the map.
Yeah, absolutely. So much variety.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks again, and until next week, take care.